have you with you today for something pretty excited. We're celebrating International Women's Day. And while it is a time to celebrate women's achievements, it's also an opportunity to shine a light on those that are still fighting for freedom and dignity. So every year, we get the chance to talk about the Jagini women and girls in India, young girls forced into ritualized slavery in a system that has existed for over 2,000 years. Today, we're not just talking about the problem, but we also want to celebrate the change. And in all honesty, I think just a real honor to be able to celebrate some of the people behind putting forth the efforts to make that change as well. So for the past couple of years, not a single new dedication has taken place in any of the 350 villages where DFN, which if you remember stands for Dignity Freedom Network, works. Women are breaking free, their lives are being restored, and recidivism rates are at an all-time low. That's incredible progress. So today, I'm joined once again by Kate, who's been a powerful voice for these women, here to share the impact of this life-changing work and how we can continue to be a part of the solution. Kate, thank you so much for joining me again today.
Great to be with you, Abby, and happy International Women's Day to you.
Thank you. You too. Listen, I meant it when I said it. It's been such an honor to be able to chat, get to know you more in the work that you do with DFN over the last couple of years. For those that are hearing of DFN and all that you do for the very first time, I was wondering if you could just first and foremost start off with who you are and exactly what it is that you do within DFN.
Yeah, well, that's great. So you did do a little bit of a summary, but just to unpack it a little bit more, in some parts of India, little girls are treated as having completely no value. So the day that they're born is just devastating for the family, because if only they were a boy, maybe they would have helped break the family out of the poverty cycle. Mm-hmm. But some of these little girls get identified by the village to be dedicated to the temple goddess in a marriage-like ceremony. And after she hits puberty, she becomes the property of the village. And because there might be some younger listeners listening, I won't unpack that too much, but being the property of the village means to be used and abused by any man day or night, basically for the rest of their very short lives. So It's just absolutely horrendous.
I find it important to talk about this regardless of how heartbreaking it is, because A, you could be a part of making a change, and B, I love being able to just highlight, Kate, what you specifically are doing in helping and what DFN is doing as well. So in what ways are you addressing some of the situations that you just talked about?
So DFN, Dignity Freedom Network, we've got four key areas of focus. So education, healthcare, skills training, and then focus on anti-human trafficking. And a lot of people ask if the gospel is one of our key focuses, and we say, no, it's actually not one of our key focuses. It actually infiltrates and is part of every single focus that we have. So we don't separate the good news out from anything that we do. So every time we're providing healthcare, non-exploitative healthcare, education to marginalized children, everything, it's all with the message that they're actually created in the image of God, that they have value, that they have worth. And so I think that that's one of the things I really love about this organization, is just really instilling in people the fact that they are people of value, that they're created in God's image and everybody's equal.
Yeah, I love that. I was taught this at a really young age, but someone said to me once that when you're a Christian, you shouldn't have to tell people you're a Christian. They should just be able to tell by who you are and what you do. And I essentially think that's exactly what you guys are doing. You don't have to go around telling people that you're doing the work of God. You are just a reflective image of God.
Exactly. And I think that that's why we're just seeing incredible impact in the things that we are doing, because we just love people and we just want to be Jesus' hands and his feet to the people who need to know that they are worth something.
Now, I do want to talk about the ways in which you guys are the hands and feet and stories and the ways in which we can rally behind you and help. But I do also want to highlight that incredible progress has been made in stopping new dedications in the villages that you work in. And I was wondering if you could touch on just what are some of the key factors that have contributed to this success?
That's a great question. So first of all, I was, over there a couple of years ago, and I said to some people in the villages that were working, how many dedications have we stopped in the last year? And they said 111. And I said, woohoo, that's fantastic. And then about a year later, I was back and I said, how many dedications have we stopped in those same villages? How many little girls have been prevented from being trafficked into this? And they said, 3. And I said, well, that's terrible. And they said, no, what it means is it's actually transforming the village mentality. They're actually stopping the dedications.
Yeah.
So at this point, we're able to announce that the villages that we're working in, where this practice, as you said, has been in existence for over 2,000 years, in the last 2 years, we have seen 0 dedications in the villages where we have an active presence. So that's just amazing. And you asked, what are the key factors? And I think, well, first of all, it's a nationally led and run organisation. And so we are the champions. We are the ones who empower. We are the ones who resource. But it's the people on the ground who are Indians, and they're the ones driving it. And mainly it's being driven by women that we've rescued. And so they've come out of this practice themselves, and they have this passion to make sure that no other little girls are going to be trafficked and have the life that they've had. And so they're just so protective. And you know, we also do a real focus on working out what the drivers are for the dedications. And so that's what we address. It's the misinformation, it's the superstitions, and then it's ensuring that these women are equipped and trained and have the resources they need so that they can go out and they can be the ones messaging that this practice needs to stop.
So one of the things that I heard in what you just said, or like the thing that stood out to me the most, was that it means that you guys have to actively be on the ground, which I know requires help from us as well to be able to make that happen. And I do want to jump in that, but and I think that this question actually might be a little bit similar to the one prior, but I want to ask it just in case. So as well as the progress that's been made in stopping new dedications, the recidivism rates have also been almost non-existent. And so I was wondering what long-term changes you're also seeing in the lives of women who have left the Jogini system, some of those that you even just mentioned that are going back to help to change the system themselves. What are some more of those like long-term changes that you've seen in them as they've left the system?
I think they actually walk tall. They have dignity. I've seen some of them who are still in the system, and they just have this vacant look in their eyes. They're alcoholics. They're demoralized. They're just complete heart-wrenching destitution of just blankness and no life. But the women that we're working with, we see them holding hands, we see them laughing, they're asking about each other's children. We provide skills training, so they're actually working, and they're providing, like the work that we're providing for, or the training is often in paramedic and phlebotomy and that kind of thing. And so they're actually in the community providing a service that the people really want. And so they're being esteemed by the people that used to criticize them, the people that used to marginalize them. And just seeing community restoration where they actually feel like they're part of a community is so precious.
It's sort of like a 360 moment. Like they often say that the thing that you heal from is the thing that you then go on to like teach or talk about so that others can be healed from it as well. And that's essentially what you're saying, is that these Jogini women are turning around and the thing that they've been healed from is the place in which that they're trying to help others overcome and heal from as well.
Exactly. And just to see them laughing together and thinking, I have no idea of everything that you've been through, but the fact that you can shake that off and step into this new you is just so exciting.
On top of some of these women staying in these villages that essentially were the same people that hurt them, you also have what you call JVLs, which are the Jogini village leaders as well. Can you share more about the role that they have in this transformation and how their firsthand experience helps prevent future dedications?
Yeah, so all the village leaders that we have, they're all women who have come out of this practice themselves. So we've provided them healthcare, we've provided them with HIV and AIDS testing and antiretrovirals, and letting them know how precious they are, praying with them, counselling them, and providing all the practical care that they need. And so they then move away out of that practice and they become our hands and feet in the village itself. And so they're the ones who are always on the watch for another dedication. And as soon as they hear a whisper of anything, they work with our team to come in, connect with the local authorities and work with the family to understand why are you planning on this dedication. It's illegal, there's repercussions, there's better options, and then working with the family to provide the better options. And as I said before, taking away the drivers of why they're dedicating. But these women are absolute warriors and they're just champions themselves. And, you know, they're the ones that I really admire. They're the ones who will walk into police stations and demand the rights of somebody else who's been abused and make sure that they don't leave and that the police are there to help. And they're the ones who will work with, you know, local magistrates. And these are uneducated women who have come out of all sorts of abuse. And yet, because they understand more about their value and worth and because they're walking in that, they have such courage and they have such tenacity to see this practice come to an end.
I can only imagine the stories that you have. And I was wondering if there's like a specific story that you would be able to share, whether it be in light of like what you just shared about the JVLs that are there and the transformation they've seen, or, you know, anything that you are allowed to share.
Yeah, so this one really impacted me deeply. It still makes me cry. But one of the other things that we do for these women is provide tailoring classes, and they go through these courses. And then at the end, they get a sewing machine, but they also get all the follow-up to run their own little business. So I went to one of the new training centres that we just opened, one of the new tailoring centres, and it was just full of these women. And I think the first thing that hit me was the colour and the buzz and the conversation and just the communal atmosphere, because these women have never experienced that kind of thing before. But one lady stood up and she wanted to talk to me. And so I looked at her and she was just kind of shaking. And then suddenly the tears started rolling down her cheeks. And I said to her, well, through a translator, what's wrong? What's the matter? And she said, I've never been so happy in my whole life. I just can't tell you. And she said, and the tears were just running down her cheeks. And I just took her in my arms and she just cried and cried. And she said, I've never understood that I could be this happy in my whole life. And I was looking at her and thinking, there's a long way to go, sweetheart. But she was just so thankful and so grateful that she had received this support and this care and practical care, spiritual care, physical care, like all of it. And she was just, she didn't have the words to express how grateful she was. And I just loved that.
Oh, thank you, Kate. That's such a sweet story. And I think like their stories in of itself hold so much power to what you guys are doing and the progress that's been made. So I appreciate you sharing it. Even with the progress, which we do want to celebrate, stories like that, that just means so much. There are still thousands of Jaginis across India. What's needed to reach more villages and to be able to expand the life-changing work that you guys do?
Great question. So as I mentioned, or as you mentioned, I think we're in 350 villages, but we've actually done a study in the field. I think Melbourne University sponsored it in the first place, and they've identified that the practice happens in around 3,000 villages in this particular region.
Wow.
But there's similar practices that happen in other parts of India as well. And so not only do we want to address the situation here in this particular region we're already working in, we also want to expand into more regions as well. And so, I mean, the answer is more workers, it's more prayers, it's more money. It's taking medical teams from Australia. You know, they can go into a village and spend a week there and just work with the women. And it's just, you know, taking more people to India as well, just to see the work and come back with the fire in their bellies of what God is doing and how we can continue to build. So it's all the usual. It's more prayers, more money, more workers, more supporters.
What would your message be to those that have been supporting the mission, as well as what's a message for those that maybe haven't but want to? How can we continue to be a part of this movement of freedom?
Well, firstly, thank you. Huge thank you. And, you know, I get to go and I get to look in the eyes of these women and I get to hear their thanks. And yet I know I'm representing so many people who are praying, who are giving, who are supporting, who are caring. And I get to hear that message. So I can now be a voice for those women to everybody listening and say thank you so much. It's making a huge difference. How can people help? We're looking for local reps who can share the story. We're looking for churches to join in. We're looking for others to come and help be a voice for those who have no voice. We're looking for interns, you know, young girls who have a heart and a passion for this, who'd like to know more about how they can learn more about issues like this and make a difference. And we're also looking for people, of course, to donate, to be a part of International Women's Day campaign and help raise funds for more Jogini village leaders. So it's $250 for one woman in one village for 1 year. So some people donate online and other people organise fundraisers. So we've got afternoon teas happening and we've got clothes swaps happening and movie nights, and people are organising these themselves. So even if people think I don't have the funds myself, but I have a network of people and I can get behind this. And you know, so we'd love to talk to anybody who's interested in knowing more about what we do and how they can help.
Yeah, it's so good. Someone said to me the other day when I was even chatting about doing this is, it's literally less than like a dollar a day for a year to support. Mm-hmm. $250 is 365 days a year. $250 is obviously less. And there is a website that they can go to if they are looking to help.
Yes, so it's dfn.org.au, so dignityfreedomnetwork.org.au, or they can phone 1-800-949-774.
Now, I know oftentimes, I mean, we've chatted a couple of times over the last couple of years, and this is something that always, like, my emotions always get involved. My heart aches for these girls and even these villages and, like, you know, the pain that's being caused throughout this whole thing. And it can be a little bit overwhelming. What encouraging word might you have or give about the difference that someone's support truly makes?
Well, it's being in the village and seeing the hope in the eyes of these women. It's them knowing that there is a hope, that there is a future, that there are people out there who care and that they're not on their own and that this is not what they were created for. They were created for so much more. Yeah. And to see that and to hear that and to see the change in the lives of these women and girls is so incredible.
Kate, thank you so much for taking time. I do. How did you specifically get involved with DFN?
So I was working with an organisation in relief and development in Southeast Asia. But it was when I went to India, when I saw the women, when I heard their stories, and I thought, I can't walk away. This is the biggest betrayal I've ever seen, because it's the parents who are putting their children into this practice. So that's the ultimate betrayal. But the other thing is that it's solvable. So how did I get involved? I went, I saw, I couldn't walk away.
And then the last and final question that I have is, do you have a particular Bible verse, a quote, something that inspires you to keep going in this effort, in this support effort?
Probably too many to mention. But I think recently I've really come across this whole thing of, we began this interview with you introducing yourself and then introducing me. Yeah. So when I think, how does God introduce himself? In Psalm 68, it says, I am a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows. That's how he defines himself. That's how he introduces himself. And I just love that about our God, that he is, who is he? He's intrinsically a father to the fatherless. He's a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling. And it just talks about, you know, that defines who he is. So there's many, many other verses as well. But for me at the moment, that's a particular verse that inspires me.
That's so good. Thank you, Kate. I really appreciate it.